All right, we have a Pirkei Avos. Pirkei Avos, Perek Aleph, Mishnah 12. Last week was fasting. Last week we had only one guy this year, and because there was no yeshiva, and he's not here, so we can go give that shiur again.
Good. It was snowing.
It was Sarabatavis.
There's a few places. 2 weeks ago, it was snowing. And the whole Israel closes down. But when there's bombs flying and missiles going, and
Hillel v'shama kiblu imehem. The next line, next people in the line of the Masora from Moshe Rabbeinu was Hillel and Shammai. Hillel Omer, pretty famous Mishnah. Eva mitalmidav shel Aaron. You should be from the students of Aaron. Oyev, I'm good, thanks. Oyev shalom v'rodev shalom. Love peace and run after it, pursue it. Oyev es abriyos mekorban l'toyah. Love people, love literally briyos, our creations, and mekorban l'toyah, bring them close to the Torah. So, first of all, the Markeves HaMishnah, or a literal translation of Markeves HaMishnah would be, Markeves HaMishnah connects, he connects the Mishnayos a lot of times. Even some people do it in some of the form of Rabbi Nachman. They connect the Torahs one to another. Sticha Saran, people make connections, even though it seems just to be random conversations or random Torahs. There's nothing random in Judaism, as we all know. So the Markeves HaMishnah connects to the Mishnayos over here in Pirkei Avos. It doesn't seem to, at least conceptually, it doesn't necessarily have to flow from one to the other, because each of them are different topics that different people spoke about, but he does connect it. He says that in the last Mishnah was speaking about heretical interpretations. It was a Mishnah all about the you have to be very careful with your words, chachamim, sages, to be very careful with your words, because if not, they can be twisted and cause tremendous damage. So he says that has to do basically with the relationship between a person and Hashem. And our Mishnah is talking about Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, which is interpersonal relationships. How do we deal with that in a proper manner? So, the Sfas points out that when the Gemara usually brings out, always in the Gemara when you're learning, it says, Machluk is Hillel v'Shammai. I will say Shammai first and Hillel second, even though we pass can always like Hillel. That's the way the Gemara brings out. Except for
Five.
Not sure. And in the times of Mashiach, we're going to go like Shammai. That's, The Sfas Zemes points out that why is because this is Hillel and Shammai. We know that Shammai was the one that, you know, when he was asked to teach the Torah on one foot, he chased the guy away with a rod, and Hillel was the one that was Makarav him. So
I know it.
Hillel.
What? It's about the commandment or something. Like that.
There you go. That's what he said. The Bakias and Shas Kaplos is astounding.
100% on your test today.
You got
100% on the test today.
Rosh Hashem.
This one right now.
So, the answer is that since this Masechta is all about Midos, Pirkei Avos is not so much about Halacha. It's more about Midos, interpersonal relationships, and how to perfect yourself. So therefore, they put Hillel first, because Hillel was the master of that. Obviously, Shammai was also a very righteous person, but in a certain sense, he represented Din more, strictness, which, if you ask why we're going to pass them like Shammai, could very well be the reason, because the world can't really exist on pure strictness right now. We need a lot of love, as this Mishnah is going to say. And therefore, we go like Hillel, who showed a lot of love. The Mishnah starts off, it says, Hevi mitalmidav shel Aaron. Mashiach, not going to be as much need for that love that we have nowadays, because it's all just going to be emes. Like right now we don't have emes, we have sheker. Therefore, the world is filled with darkness. Therefore, it's not so easy to walk, as we were saying before. If you can't see, it's not so easy to walk. But in the end of the days, when the lights will be turned on, Rabbi Elazar Azkari, he says, "What does it mean, hevei mitalmidav shel Aaron?" It says you should be from the talmidim. So he says this is actually giving us great encouragement, right? That you're going to see Aaron HaKohen, as we're going to speak soon, what did Aaron HaKohen do? He was an amazing person. But you might think, how in the world am I going to do like that? So he says, the Mishnah says, Heve mitalmidav shel Aaron HaKohen. You can become, Heve means you can become like a Talmud from Aaron. You can become like a Talmud from Aaron. You can literally become part of him, like him, in this most literal sense. The Sfas Zemes says that, how can we do this? How can we actually make peace like Aaron HaKohen did? So he says, the only way to do that is to learn these traits of peacefulness and how to make peace from a real tzaddik, from a living tzaddik. If you hang around a tzaddik long enough, so you see how they interact with people, how they're able to make peace and bring goodness into the world, so then you could do that.
Want to hang out with me?
Yeah. So this explains basically that connection that the Mishnah uses to a specific person, right? But Leib Simcha adds, he says, what's the greatest way to learn from a tzaddik? That the Mishnah also gives that. It says, having mitalmidah shel Aaron. Usually, it doesn't say, it doesn't connect, the Mishnah never says, you know, be from a Talmud from Aaron HaKohen, but this Mishnah says, be from a Talmud. What does that mean? It means that you should be the great, you should connect to the tzaddik, and the way to do that is to be a Talmud. What does it mean to be a Talmud? It means to be totally absorbed, totally nullified to the tzaddik, and follow him around, hang around with him. Like we know, we always say, Shimusha Yoisim in the Muda, you learn a lot more from hanging around the tzaddik than even from learning his sefer or even from hearing his speeches, being that you see how he literally lives his life.
That's why I hang around here.
That's right, from the tzaddikim here. So the nice thing, we get back to what was these peacemaking things that Aaron HaKohen did. What did he do to make peace? So Bartanura says that basically if he saw two people, a husband and a wife, and they were quarreling, they were fighting, so he'd go to one side and he'd say, you know how much the other side cares about you, you know how much they really feel so bad, and he'd go to the other side and he'd say, they're coming right now towards you and they really feel so bad, and they would both come out and they'd say, wow, I didn't know, and they would make up. And they would have peace and reconciliation from that. How did he do the next part of the Mishnah? Aharon HaKohen. Aharon HaKohen. The Bartanura is the commentary. They had shown various problems. Yeah, probably from the beginning of time, from Adam and Chava in the Gan Eden.
Don't touch the tree.
It was the woman's fault. It was the lady's fault. It says that if Adam Rishon would have just said Chatasi, he wouldn't have gotten kicked out of Gan Eden. We would have had Tikkun HaOlam. Everything would have been all right. But he didn't. He said, it's the woman. She told me to do it. So the lesson, I guess, we could learn. Obviously, we have no idea why it was really going on, but is not to blame other people. Anything. Or that it's always the woman's fault. The Bartanura says, what does it mean to oyev asabriyas mkoven la Torah? In the simple understanding of it, to love people and to bring them close to the Torah. So he says that Aaron HaKohen also would do something interesting. He would see a guy, and this guy is sinning. He's doing some sins, he's doing some stuff he shouldn't be doing.
Yeah.
So Aaron HaKohen, the Kohen Gadol, Moshe Rabbeinu's brother in the Midbar there, you know, all the Jews there, he would actually, you think he would come and he would, you know, sign like a picket thing. He would stand outside. He wouldn't do that. He would come to the guy, he'd knock on the door. In his old glorious Kohanic gear, and he would shine his face, and he'd walk in. He said, "Can I come in?" He'd say, "Sure, of course." He would say, "How are you? How's everything going?" Yeah, and he would show them tremendous honor and respect. And this guy sitting there, who just 10 minutes ago did who knows what, he's sitting there crumbling in his seat, like he wants to, he's crawling in his skin. He's like, if Aaron HaKohen knew what I just did 10 minutes ago, he would never be talking to that. He would continue talking to him in such nice, glowing terms, and the guy would literally say, I'm never doing this again, I can't do this, you know? And he'd give up all his bad ways and he'd go back. That's what it says in the Bartanura.
That the same Aaron HaKohen that watched everybody make the Hilazah?
That's the same one. Aaron HaKohen, the brother of Moshe.
But again, they had just murdered someone in front of them.
Right. Yeah. I mean, Aaron, in the end, was not held accountable for that, I think. But the point is that he was definitely he was able to make peace like that. There's a story of a family who moved into Bnei Brak, and from wherever they moved them, for whatever reason, they decided to remain oblivious to the spiritual standings of Bnei Brak, and they came in. They brought in their huge television there, and they put it. You know, they didn't hide it in the closet. They put it in the salon, right there, you know, had a nice couch facing it. And the neighbors were like, didn't know what to do with themselves. You know, like, you know, the guy wears a small kippah, he's a guy in the rocking over television. So they were going crazy. So it came time for the Rav, it finally came to the ears of the Rav. The Rav of the town, in place of taking the Mei Sharm stance, he took the Aaron HaKohen stance, and he knocked on the door. He came inside, and he said, course, the television was standing right there. He says, "How are you? I heard you're new in the neighborhood. How are you? Welcome. Where are you from? What's your family name? Wow,
please turn the TV off. I'm trying to talk to
you." No, he was just totally like ignored the television and just kept showering praises and concern and consideration. And they were like, "Oh." Super embarrassed that there's like the Rav of Nivrak sitting there. He didn't say one word. He spent a good 40 minutes there. He walked out. The television came right after. You know, he waited till the car passed by. You know, and then they used the laundry machine box to throw it. It's a famous story. You know, one of the towns in America that they whenever they buy a television, they make sure that it goes in a laundry machine box. You know? You got a new washing machine. You know,
right. Nobody says anything.
Nowadays, I don't think you needed that. You know, you just it's flat screen, so it's easier to take care of. But
even if they had a hot instead of PS, it would be a little bit easier because hot is not such a good TV system.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe.
You have to ask the Rav.
Oh, no, I'm not asking.
He's but MS.
To live in Bnei Brak without a television? Or to be in Shalem with a television?
Oh. We're in the palace of the king, so we gotta
act. Get a fish tank.
Gotta act a little bit.
Actually, a fish tank.
I have friends that have a fish tank.
I have friends that have a fish tank
instead of a TV. Like, that's where the couch is and a fish tank.
Yeah, and you get like a shark and throw in a couple of fishes every day.
It's pretty interesting. Yeah,
it's fun. It's fun.
No, actually, you start with the 9 centimeters, the goldfish.
The 10 agarot?
Yeah, the 10 agarot. And you just keep on feeding them. And they get. You start with 10 gallon. I mean, you start with 20 gallon, then 30, 40 gallon, then 60 gallon, 120 gallon. They grow.
And then you take the fish out and feed it to the cat.
No. I don't want to talk about that. I don't want to talk about that.
Okay, we won't talk about it.
Anyways.
No, we found one.
The fish ate the cat?
He took him out of the fish tank. We heard the story. He pulled him out of the fish tank and brought him over to the door.
Yep.
The door said, I know.
Wow. Jerusalem cats.
Yeah. These are domesticated cats.
Anyways.
One is Cookie, one is Duke.
Then again, if you...
And the fish are cats.
Yes.
Baruch Hashem, if you have enough kids, you don't really need a television. They'll use it, maybe, but you won't have time for it.
I wish I didn't even know what a television was.
Watch the television.
I wish I didn't know.
It's poison.
The television is poison.
I like his vomit. Yeah. The Sfas Emes extends this. He extends this idea to our personal relationship with Hashem. What does he say? He says the same thing. Aaron used to show kindness to them. They used to get embarrassed and they used to do things. We should also recognize that this is with Hashem. Here we are. We do X, Y, and Z that Hashem is maybe all not so happy about. And still, I got my hands, I got my feet, I'm breathing, I got clothing, I got all this good. So I should realize Hashem is like doing the same thing. He's like pouring forth blessing to me and saying, "Hi, I love you, it's amazing." But like, you know, recognize, wake up, you know, like I'm here, I see everything. The Shari Menachem, he adds a very interesting thing that he says like this. He says that the Mishnah is only talking about a person that has desires, follows his desires, and he does it in kind of like a private way. But a person that is openly against Hashem and decides that he's, you know, doesn't like Hashem and anti-Hashem and publicly flaunts Torah and all that stuff, he falls under the category of Rodef Shalom. The Mishnah says, Oyev Shalom, you should love peace, the Rodef Shalom, and run after peace. So he says, Rodef Shalom actually means run away from peace. The way to run towards peace is to run away from these people. So he says that, he gives a little caveat to say that when you're doing Kirov, if you're going to come in contact with someone that's very, very powerful and very openly against Hashem, it's better not to have contact with them, rather than to say, you know, I'm going to be the car of them. I had a friend that, I don't know, acquaintance in Shir, and he was super duper idealistic. He was a total Baal Tshuva. I don't even know, maybe he was a Ger Tzedek. And he came from, you know, Nebraska somewhere, but he was really fired up about Judaism and about Israel and about Torah. Yeah. And he was like, that's it, I'm going to go to the Israeli army, and since I have such power in Torah and everything, I'm going to bring them closer to Hashem. I'm telling you, my whole platoon is going to be doing, you know, spoiler. And he was very, very, like, super duper duper into it. And sure enough, the rabbis I was with, they kind of like, I talked to them and they said, you're right, the way you're doing it, everything is 100% right, but I don't know if the army is quite ready for it right now. So, anyways, he fell off the face of the planet because he took his course. I see him like half a year later, and he's like, hey, you don't understand. They're such a shock. He's like, I had to run away. I was doing everything I could, and they would squelch me and, you know, persuade me and then throw women at me. It was crazy. He was like, it was like, he said he was like, whoa, he had to literally run away, and then he was dodging police and everything. I don't know what happened to him in the end. Hopefully he's okay, but he didn't look great, and he definitely didn't. So basically, certain types of kirov would be better to run away from than to run towards. In that sense,
do we need to pray for him?
Do we need what?
Do we need to pray for him?
Pray for him, most likely, but I have no idea where he is or what happened to him. So,
do we have his name?
I didn't even know his name.
Okay,
it was a long time ago.
Yankel Ben Yankel.
Yeah, Avram Ben Avram. So he's a good guy. Hashem should be with him. I'm sure he pulled it together. I hope. Last I saw him, like a few months later, he said he was on a mission to like hurt police. So hopefully that didn't bring him in. You'd like just like shove police officers if you saw them.
He's an American guy?
Yeah.
What happened?
I don't know. That was literally like 12, 13 years ago. So hopefully now he's married with kids.
You're from the state too, right?
Yeah.
I think I need to edit this out.
What?
Actually, don't worry.
I hope he's good.
Everything's going to be fine.
Yeah, everything's going to be
everything's
fine.
Everything's
he'll put it together. He'll pull it together or they'll pull him together. The Tiferes Yisrael says that it's actually talking about three levels of humility, this Mishnah. Talmidei shel Aaron means that even when you have people greater than you. Moshe Rabbeinu was younger than Aaron HaKohen, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe, you're going to be the redeemer of Klal Yisrael. And Aaron HaKohen, who was older than him, gave up and said, I'm going to, you know, be happy that Moshe Rabbeinu got
choice.
The job. What?
Well, like he had a choice?
He had a choice to be angry or happy about it. He was happy about it. He didn't give in to the thing and say, like, why was my younger brother getting the job, not me?
Why those younger guys get
to know every morning? That's, yeah, there you go. So that's the thing. When he went, people greater than you, you have to have humility. Then Oyev Shalom, Brother of Shalom is equals, like friends. Even sometimes there you have to humble yourself to make peace. The third level is Oyev Esabriyes, the Makar on the Torah, love the creatures and the people, humanity, and bring them closer to Torah. So the Mishnah says Briyes. Briyes is not even people. Creatures could be called Briyes. It's anything created. So it's saying that even people that are not even good enough to be called people, we still have to be kind to them and humble before them. The words of the Yachin, of the Tiferes Yisrael, are, we should speak to such people in words of appeasement, grace, and kindness, like a merciful father speaking to his son. Right? A father, even if his son was all bad and this and everything, he would still always speak to him, hopefully, in merciful, beautiful, beautiful terms. And he says, why do we speak to people like that? Because a person doesn't listen to the advice of one who hates him, only to the advice of one who loves him. Right? You never went to someone and, you know, screaming at, you know, all these people that scream at people, and at the end of the day, not necessarily that anyone listens to them because they don't really like them. If they actually do love them, then they would get through to them much more. So, the question is also, the Beis Yisrael, actually, just one more vart on that, says that that's what the mission is even saying, clearly. The mission says, first love people, that's really one. Through genuinely loving people, so then you can naturally bring them close to the Torah. You got Akiva Weinstein, Akiva Kapowitz's neighbor, who is literally an example of this par excellence. He doesn't teach anyone, he doesn't do anything, he just loves people and shows them a good time and literally brings people. Yeah, yeah, I'm saying, but his thing is just a lot of goodness and love. Yeah. If they have that clip on YouTube, it's Kedaida Bima first. So how exactly does this peace and love bring people closer to the Torah? Right? What is it about loving people that bring people closer to the Torah? Nachman explains that in the Kutim around 122, he says that when there is strife amongst people, so their conversations are basically just to show who's right, right? You ever seen two guys speaking about things? I'm right, you're right, I'm right, you know? Or they're speaking even in the Torah, I'm right. Each one is using his arguments to just push forward his ego, right? Nothing constructive comes to that. But he says, when there's peace between people, so he calls it that the air between them is clear. When the air between them is clear and they start speaking about Hashem, about the purpose of life, I just heard yesterday about Hillel Zaks. He passed away 2 days ago. He was Chafetz Chaim's grandson. He just passed away. And he, when he was looking for a shidduch, one of the prospective shidduchim people came to him, and it was obviously a very chush of a family, so they had like an uncle or something to speak to him before about the shidduch. So he said, you know, Rav Hillel, Like, where are you going? How do you see yourself? Where do you see yourself going in life? So he answered to them, I see myself dying. They're like, excuse me? He had a very interesting sense of humor, supposedly. They're like, excuse me? He goes, listen, I look at it like this. Success, business, even learning. Maybe we'll do it, maybe we won't. Death, for sure. So I'm prepared for death, certainty. Always, he said he was always, you know, and he had talk, you know, he lived his life thinking about
Rabbi Shmuel Shapiro.
He has the same
that thing.
Really?
Yeah,
same story?
Yeah, when he got married, he said, he laid down on the doorstep and said, you know, with feet first, and this is how we're going to go out. Feet first.
Wow. Yeah, they say about one of the rich people in the 1800s, who was it? One of the rich Baron Rothschild, or one of them, used to go in a coffin every day. To spend a few minutes in a coffin. He was like one of the wealthiest people in the world. Think about that thing.
He
went a few minutes into a coffin?
He went a few minutes into a coffin to remember, with all the riches, with all the nice stuff that he had, Rav Reuven Dessler, the father of Rav Eliyahu Dessler, was also a very wealthy person. One time they came into a room with, like, it was like one of these, you know, he had a palatial mansion, and he had this room with gorgeous couches and exquisite everything. He lived it, you know, he lived life. They came in there, and he was jumping on the couch with his feet. They were like, what are you doing? He was like, I always have to, like, remind myself, like, this is stupid. Yeah, like, this is not, like, this is beautiful, but it's not what we're here for, you know. He's, like, stepping on the couch, I don't know exactly. But anyways, yeah. Yeah, actually, he said another story. Rav Hillel Zaks from him.
I want to be in the story. Zach, why can't I be one of those guys who just have like a scientific answer?
Yeah, he wants to be in the story.
Well, I'll have it.
Because maybe you wouldn't jump on the couch.
I'll jump on
the couch. He said that when he was getting married, this person, Rabbi Sandler, was speaking. So Rav Hillel Zaks met him in his kala. And he said to his kala, you know what a shutif is? So she said, well, yeah. He said, it's a partner. He says, don't be a shutif in your marriage. Don't be a partner in your marriage. So she didn't know what his, you know, humor was saying there. So he says, I'll tell you why. I'll tell you what I mean. He says, when we first got married, Rav Hillel Zaks was saying, so when we first got married, we got a couch, and my neighbor upstairs, also a couple, got a couch. They paid $800 for the couch. We paid $80 for the couch. He said, they were shutef from their couch, we owned their couch. Why? Because the second that our couch came to their house, it was covered in plastic. You couldn't sit, you couldn't stand on it, you couldn't sleep on it, you couldn't eat or drink on it, you couldn't do anything on it. Sometimes you're allowed to sit on it. He says, our couch was $80. We came in, we sat on it, we stood on it, we played on it, you know, the kids played on it, everything we did. He says, we owned our couch. They were just a partner with the couch. He says, when you're in a marriage, make sure you're an owner of the marriage. Not a, you know, feel comfortable. You should be feel like open and it applies to everything within life. You know, you don't have to get the fanciest car because in the end of the day, it will own you, not necessarily you will own it. But anyways, to end off the Mishnah, right. At the end of the Mishnah, the Leiv Simcha, one of the Ger Rebbe, say a very interesting thing. At the end of the Mishnah, it says, Makarvan, what? Ger is probably like 9 since the beginning. Makarvan Latoyah. What does it mean, Makarvan Latoyah? So he says that, it means literally, he brought them close to Torah. Why doesn't it say he taught them Torah, or he showed them, or these things? So he says he brought them close to Torah. Why? Because every single person has his chelek. Like we say in Shemoneh Esrei at the end, give us our portion of Torah. Every person has a portion in Torah that speaks to him, that he gets fired up about, whether it's halacha or musar or chassidus, whatever it is. So Aaron HaKohen wouldn't tell them, you know, the way to learn is you have to learn the Gemara, the Rashi, the Tosfos, and then do this and do that. He would just bring them close to Torah so much with such a love that they would find their place in the Torah that they loved, that drew their soul naturally towards the Torah, and they would run after that. We should be zoicheh to have all these things. Hashem yizakenu, shkoyach.